This message, titled The Lord's Will for Tomorrow, from James chapter 4, verses 13 through 17, was preached at Winchester Reformed Presbyterian Church in Winchester, Kansas. For more information, visit us at winchesterrp.com. Well, brothers and sisters, if I can begin this morning by noting that the passage that we turn to is one that is very sobering. It contains truths that many of us would rather neglect and ignore in our lives, but truths that are inevitable and truths that the Scriptures and God expect us to look into, to consider, and even to live by. The words of James here are tremendously sobering, and I myself was reminded of that this morning. When in a very real sense, the sobriety of what James writes here was felt and experienced. As I stood in a hospital room with our brother who is nearing death, and to think in that moment, providentially, God was giving to me an experience of the words that James writes here that we are turning to this morning. It is sobering. And each of us, if the Spirit is willing this morning, my prayer is that each of us would feel the sobriety of this and to understand the things that are contained here. Things that are weighty and things that are meaningful. I want to remind you that this is the part of the letter, as we've been saying, where James is applying everything that he has written so far to three particular situations, three particular scenes that could probably be drawn from most of our everyday lives. James has written extensively in this letter, laying out what you might call principles of the devoted life. But James doesn't want to just leave us with principles. Now James wants to seek to apply those principles to these everyday situations, everyday realities that you and I face, encouraging us, exhorting us, commanding us to be devoted to Christ, even in the mundane details of life. And last week, as the Spirit enabled, we considered and saw that James applies all that he had written so far to the simple point of how it is that you and I are to speak to and about other people. That it matters what words we use when we speak about other people. And here this morning is another common example for Christians, for us, about the devoted life and what it looks like. And so as I am enabled this morning, I want to preach these words and do so following the design of James, preaching first on making plans, secondly on boasting arrogantly, and finally, as the Spirit gives utterance, to preach on living providentially. And so our focus first and foremost this morning in this text, I want to begin on the point of making plans. Making plans. You notice here in verse 13, the way in which this verse is introduced to us, it is with two words. James writes, come now. Come now. And they're not wasted words. And so we need to pause for a second, and I think we can readily understand in one sense why James is saying this, come now. You know, any of you who play sports, you may know that there are times your coach has told you certain things ad nauseum. You know exactly what you're supposed to do when you get on the court. You know exactly what you're supposed to do when you get on the field. And then what happens? You don't do what's expected of you. And your coach might in that moment yell out, come on! You guys are better than this. You know this. You know this. Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that thing that is so obvious? I know you know this. And in much the same way, this is the spirit in which James enters upon the subject today. Come on, you guys. Come now. It's as though James is saying, I'm about to tell you something, and I know every one of you knows it, but you neglect it. You overlook it. You don't live in light of those things that you know. And so you almost get a sense here in verse 13 as James begins a bit of, maybe we can just call it a sanctified frustration. James saying, come now. And what is it that James wants us to think about? Well, it's naturally expressed here in the 13th verse. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make profit. James is focusing on a particular area of our lives, my life and your life. And the area of life that James is coming to make us consider is the area of making plans. Of our schedule. Of the way in which you and the way in which I think about tomorrow. And it's interesting and it's worth noting here for James that in one sense, when you read these words, it's not just any and every plan, but James actually gives this to us, can I put it this way this morning, in economic terms. It's our economic plans. He says, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such and such a town for what? And spend a year there and trade and make a profit. James very narrowly, very particularly here, is seeking to make us think about our economic plans for our lives. The way in which the way in which you make plans for our daily provision. For our daily sustenance. The way in which we make plans for our daily needs. And when James does that, and as he does that, it is something, brothers and sisters, that should and likely does connect with every single one of us. Because in so many ways and in so many times, the question that is present in so many of our lives and minds is what? How will I provide for tomorrow? Our young people grow up, they graduate high school, and that is the question that is forced on them by everyone. How are you going to provide for tomorrow? What does that mean? Are you going to go get a college education? Are you going to go right into the workforce? When we think about our daily labors and when we put our feet on the floor tomorrow morning, many of us will have before us the day's provision. I need to go to work and I need to earn my wages and I need to make a profit. Even you who are retired, this is the question. How will I provide for tomorrow? And I want to be clear as we come to this, brothers and sisters, that's not a wrong question to ask. James is not here condemning the asking of the question, how am I going to plan for tomorrow? That's not a wrong question to ask. It's not a wrong thing to do to figure out how am I going to provide for my daily needs tomorrow and the day after that and the day after that and the years beyond that. There's nothing at face value in and of itself wrong with making those kinds of plans. In fact, we could think this morning, couldn't we? Do you remember in Proverbs chapter 6? Solomon, in the way that he does in all of his wisdom, in all of his exalted wisdom, what does Solomon do? In Proverbs 6, he picks one of God's tiniest creatures. And he says, hey, sluggard, you lazy man, consider the ant. Look at the ant, Solomon says, and consider her ways. Why? Well, not simply because an ant is busy for the sake of busyness, but Solomon says in Proverbs 6, consider the ant, consider her ways, because she is wise. And she is wise, Solomon says, because she prepares bread in the summer and she gathers food at harvest. Solomon is looking in very practical terms at what you and I would likely call the lazy person. The lazy person who is not defined by any real productivity. Sure, a lazy person can busy themselves doing all kinds of things here and things there. But Solomon is saying, no, the sluggard is the one who fails to prepare. Who fails to make plans and to be about work and business in a wise manner, discerning what is going to be tomorrow. And it's not just Proverbs 6, but you could go to different places in the scriptures, especially in Proverbs, and this same principle is repeated over and over. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 5, he who gathers in the summer is a prudent son. He who sleeps at harvest is a son who brings shame. Proverbs 21, verse 5, the plans of the diligent lead surely to abundance. There's wisdom, there's prudence in doing these things and making these plans, right? And what is prudence? Prudence is showing a care, it is showing thought for the future. And it is, brothers and sisters, it is part of biblical wisdom. Joseph himself is commended, as we've read this morning in Genesis 41. Why? He was a wise and a discerning man. Why? Because he was able to make economic provision for the days that lay ahead for the nation of Egypt. He was able to do that. And so we need to come here to James and what James says here. And we need to understand from one angle that This idea of making economic plans, of making plans to be here today and there tomorrow and spending time here and making a profit, these are not things that are inherently at face value wrong or standing condemned by James. There is a principle of wisdom in that. There's a principle of wisdom in planning today what might be tomorrow. So James is putting us there on our schedules, on the making of plans, on making plans for our daily provision, for our sustenance, on making plans to meet the needs that we have in our life. So my first point as we come here is the making of plans. But secondly, in keeping our focus on the text, going from the making of plans is James's next point, which is boasting arrogantly. Boasting arrogantly. Look at verse 16. James says, as it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. So if we begin to connect the dots, right? It's not the making of plans that is in and of itself wrong and evil. But what James is saying, brothers and sisters, James is saying there is a way to make plans that actually becomes sinful. And what is that? What is it that in the making of our plans actually makes our plans a boast of arrogance? Or to put it this way this morning, what lies between verse 13 and verse 16? What is it that can actually make the making of plans a sinful endeavor on our parts? And of course, the answer provided by James is verse 14. James says in verse 13, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make profit. And then in verse 14, yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. And we can sum James's point up in this, friends. It's not the making of plans at face value that is sinful. It is actually how those plans are made. And James is indicating that by and large, even as Christians, even as those who have been born again by the word of truth, that you and I have a tendency to make plans in a way that is sinful. And the sin is this, if I can put it this way, it is making plans without recognizing our limits. It's making plans without recognizing our limits. And for James, that's a double-edged sword. The first side of that is when we make plans in the midst, you might say, or without recognizing, that's a better way to put it, when we make plans without recognizing our own ignorance. James says in verse 14, yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. And it's a self-obvious truth. Everybody knows this. The godly and the ungodly, the righteous and the unrighteous, young, old, men, women, wherever you are, everybody knows. No, we don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. We have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow. You and I, we have no idea what's going to happen an hour from now. And we can't deny it. We can't live as though that's not a reality and an ever-present reality. It's so self-evident. But James is saying, amazingly, and maybe when we understand the sinfulness of our hearts, it's not that amazing, but amazingly, though we know this, many of us live as though it's functionally not true. As though maybe we do know exactly what tomorrow is going to bring. As though maybe we do know what this next hour is going to have in store for us. And there's a tendency in our sinful hearts to make our plans failing to recognize our own ignorance. Maybe you remember the way that Jesus rather colorfully illustrated this in Matthew 24. In Matthew 24, Jesus, you may remember, he characterizes Noah's generation. And how did Jesus characterize Noah's generation? And in Matthew 24, he says, well, Noah's generation, you know what they did. He says they rose up. They rose up and they ate and they drank and they were merry. Before the flood, that's what they did. Day by day, that's how they lived. They ate, they drank, and they were merry. And every day they woke up and they just assumed today's going to be just like yesterday. And so today I will do what I did yesterday. I will eat, I will drink, I will be merry. And Jesus says that characterized the entire generation of Noah. But then Jesus says, if you remember in Matthew 24, that the people rose up to eat, to drink, and to be merry until the day Noah entered the ark, and then they were swept away. And Jesus is saying in not so many words, and James here as the half-brother of Jesus is saying, don't you understand, this is the way so many of us live our lives. Well, today is just going to be like yesterday, and tomorrow's going to be like today, so let us go on, always doing what we do. And you don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. We're ignorant of the fact. Solomon in Proverbs 27, do not boast about tomorrow. For you do not know what a day may bring. So when we make plans, not recognizing our own ignorance, James is saying you've become a boastful and arrogant, evil person. But the other side of that double-edged sword is not only our ignorance, but friends, it's when we make plans not recognizing the brevity of life. James says in verse 14, "What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes." And brothers and sisters, what the Bible infallibly declares to be true, that our life is a fleeting mist that appears for a moment in time and then it vanishes. What the Bible declares as infallibly true in every footstep of human history has been confirmed a million times by our own experience. Life is a vapor. I remember in fourth grade, it's the day after my birthday, my classmates and I got to school and we were immediately ushered into the music room. And there our teachers told us that one of our classmates, an 11-year-old boy, died unexpectedly in his sleep. I remember my senior year of high school, a very similar scene played out. So we found out that one of my classmates, a girl, was walking along the road and a car hit her and she died. I remember in college, a student in one of the campus Bible studies was out on a campus Bible study ski trip and he broke his arm and he went to the hospital. Everything was fine. They gave him anesthesia and he never woke up. I remember receiving news shortly after I'd graduated college that a good friend of mine was doing some camping ministry and with a group of girls was hiking on a trail and she stepped into a river and the current pulled her under and washed her over a waterfall. Just this week, I spoke to a father who less than 2 years ago, his completely healthy 20-year-old son was at college and decided to play a pickup game of something. And he fell down in the grass and he died. And 2 years later, no one has any clue why he died. What the Bible declares as infallibly true has been confirmed a million times, brothers and sisters, by our experience. What is your life? What is my life? We are a mist that appears for a moment and then we vanish. And the Bible, in such colorful, graphic illustrations, depicts this. Isaiah tells us in Isaiah 40 that all of life is like, it's like the grass of the field and the flower. As the flower fades and as the grass withers, so too does our life. The Bible compares our lives to the gust of wind, to a leaf that is carried about by the breeze, to a shadow that stretches for a moment in time. Or Job. In Job chapter 9, what is it Job says? He heaps up the illustrations. "My days are swifter than a runner. They flee away. They see no good. They go by like skiffs of reed, like an eagle swooping on its prey." And the point of the Bible, the point of James here, brothers and sisters, is that life passes quickly. And there is absolutely no guarantee, and there is absolutely no assurance, and there is absolutely no certainty that the plans we make in verse 13 will come to fruition. Because, brothers and sisters, sobering as it is, it needs to be heard. Death does not wait for us to fulfill all of our plans. Death does not stop at the doorstep and say, "You let me know when you've done everything that you've planned to do, and then you can drift quietly into the darkness." James says, no, our life appears for a little time, and then it vanishes. It passes quickly. And this sobering reality has to factor in. It has to factor in to the way in which we make our plans. Do you remember the parable that Jesus told in Luke 12? It's the parable of the rich fool. The rich fool who's a farmer. And Jesus says in Luke 12, he looks at his field, and his field is just producing one crop after another. It is a bountiful harvest. And this man is like, wow, I don't even have enough room in the barns that I have to store all the abundance of what I have, all of these resources. So what does he do? Jesus says in that parable, he says, you know what I'll do? I'll tear my barns down, and I'm going to build bigger barns. And I'm going to build bigger barns so that I can put all my crops in it, that I can make all these plans, that I can store them. And Jesus says that's exactly what this man does. It's exactly what he does. And when he finishes doing that, Jesus says, he puts his feet up and he says, now it's time to relax. And do you remember the parabolic point? Do you remember the point that Jesus hammers in Luke chapter 12? He says, as that foolish rich man puts his feet up to relax, Jesus says this, God said to him, "Fool, this night your soul is required of you. And the things that you have prepared, whose will they be? You fool." There's no assurance. And James's point is this, friends. It's a salient point, but it's this. Gospel humility has a place in the way that you and I make plans. That as we speak about providing for tomorrow, we need that humility that James has already written about, that humility through which the Lord exalts us. And James is saying, when you fail, even in your schedules, when you fail to have humility, you are boasting in your arrogance. And James doesn't hide, he doesn't tiptoe, he doesn't beat around the bush. He says, you boast in your arrogance, and that's evil. It's sinful. James is saying, there is a way to make plans. It's not neutral. There's actually a way to make plans and to be sinful in the way in which you make those plans. And I wonder this morning, do you notice here, do you appreciate here in what little nuanced, unexpected ways sin creeps into our lives? That sin itself stains the way in which you and I often make plans. So that's boasting arrogantly. But finally, following James's points is my third point. Making plans, boasting arrogantly. Thirdly, then, is living providentially. So, of course, the big question, right, is well, what do we do, James? If I'm so ignorant as to not know what tomorrow's going to bring, if my life is so brief that I'm here for a moment and then I'm gone, thanks, James, where does that leave me? What am I supposed to do? And of course, I suppose there's a number of answers that could be given to that question. There might be some who are almost tempted to think, well, fine, there's no use to it then. I'm just going to be inactive. If I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring, if I don't know the measure and the span of my life and my days, fine, I'm not going to do anything. I'll make no plans for tomorrow. I will not consider for a moment how I'm going to provide for myself when I put my feet on the floor on Monday morning. Never mind, dash it all, inactive. Which, of course, goes right back to what the Bible condemns. That's to be a sluggard. That's to be lazy. That is to live in that spirit that the Apostle Paul condemns in 2 Thessalonians 3. If you don't work, you don't eat. It's to negate the responsibility, the practical daily responsibilities that God in Christ has given to us. What is it that Paul says in 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 11? Aspire to live a quiet life, mind your own business, and work with your hands. So inactivity is not the answer to this. I suppose even more, my heart and your heart might be overwhelmed by anxiety. I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring, and I don't know the span of my days. It is so easy to yield to anxiety and to be consumed with worry about what tomorrow will bring. And brothers and sisters, let me state it plainly this morning. Let me state it plainly. Anxiety is beneath the Christian. In Matthew chapter 6, Jesus says, don't worry about what you're going to eat and what you're going to drink and what you're going to wear, but seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Don't be anxious. Anxiety, Jesus says, it can't add an hour to your life. Those are Jesus' words. Anxiety is beneath a Christian. And when I say that, I'm preaching that to myself as someone who knows what it is at times to be anxious. But it's what Jesus says. It's what the testimony of Scripture says. Anxiety is not something that Christians can give quarter to in their lives. Because we've got a heavenly Father who loves us and who cares for us as a father cares for his children. And so if inactivity is not the answer, and just throwing hands up in some nihilistic, defeatist way, and if anxiety is not the answer, how then, brothers and sisters, how do we live? And James gives us the answer. In verse 15, instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. And it probably sounds a little cliche this morning, I'm sorry for it. But James is saying, how do we live? We live, brothers and sisters, not self-reliantly, but we live with a Godward reliance. To say over all things, if the Lord wills. What does that look like? What does that practically mean? Very simply. It means first and foremost, if we're going to live providentially, if we're going to live in this way, it means, brothers and sisters, that we need to recognize that the will of God is the determining factor of all things. The will of God is the determining factor of all things. The psalmist tells us in Psalm 10, it is the wicked man who does not have God in his thoughts. It is the godly man, it is the godly woman who has God in their thoughts and understands that his will is the determining factor of all things. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 9. The heart of man plans his ways, but the Lord establishes his steps. Proverbs 16, 33. The lot is cast into the lap, but it's every decision is from the Lord. Proverbs 19:21, many plans are in the mind of a man, but it is the purpose of the Lord that will stand. And how often, brothers and sisters, how often have we sung with the psalmist that 127th psalm? Do you believe it this morning? Unless the Lord builds the house, the workmen labor in vain. You see, we need to recognize in our minds, and we need to recognize in our hearts that the will of God is the determining factor of all things. Nothing happens apart from his will. He is the God who accomplishes all of his purposes. And we need to recognize that in our daily schedules, in the way in which we make plans, James is saying you need to recognize God's will is the determining factor. But not only, brothers and sisters, do we need to recognize that, we also need to submit to it. Brothers and sisters, you and I, we need to live in submission to the will of God. To not merely be Christians who say, if the Lord wills, as if it's some pithy Hallmark saying, but to be those who submit to him, to live in and by his will. You see, this is not some disconnected theological point for James. This is something that runs into our daily schedules, to live by his will, to submit to it and to resign ourselves to it. You ought to say, he says, if the Lord wills. And this means, friends, this means for us this morning both to live prospectively in submission to the will of God. And by prospectively, I mean beforehand, to yield ourselves, not my will, but your will be done. Or as Solomon tells us in Proverbs chapter 3, a much quoted, sometimes so much so that it loses its force. But what does Solomon say in Proverbs chapter 3? Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. Acknowledge him in all of your ways, and he will make your path straight. And so prospectively we say, Lord, whatever your will is, whatever it is, I will not lean on my own understanding. And this submission is also then, brothers and sisters, submission to God's will is also retrospective in our lives. It's retrospective in that we need, you need, I need to acknowledge that whatever my plans may have been, whatever has happened has been the will of God. And that does not mean that we meet the will of God in our lives stoically. When we first got married, we had great plans. That Rachel was going to work and put me through seminary. And the Lord had other plans, and he gave us a daughter. And we met his will with the joy and the gladness of parents. We're glad, really glad that plan was frustrated, that God had a different will. And there are times in our lives when our plans are not derailed by blessings. but by that which appears to us to be crosses and losses. And we don't meet that stoically. We meet the will of God even with tears in our eyes. But we say it's the will of the Lord. He has so willed it, and because he is good, because he is wise, because he is kind, that I need to receive his will as that which is good, and that which is wise, and that which is kind. Being mindful that as a child of God, it's a promise that gets a lot of traction and is spread far and wide, but it's a promise that we ought to plant our lives on, brothers and sisters, that all things do work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purposes. James's point is providential living, to live and to die by the will of God. To say, even as that old hymn says, whatever my God ordains is right, here shall my stand be taken, though sorrow, need, or death be mine, I am not forsaken. And friends, it's that kind of faith in God, in his character, in his gospel, in his promises, that frees every one of us as Christians to scribble over every plan we have, if the Lord wills. And James is saying, this is the devoted life. A life of plans lived in submission to the perfect, pleasing will of God. Let's pray.